from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are awash, about to be awash, if not already awash, in let's put the best face on it. Remembrance. Now, certain networks disagree. I believe, according to the Fox News Channel, last September 11th was the day that changed America. According to CNN, it's the day that changed the world. I wish you guys could get together on this. But we're about to be swamped. I think this is the only program that will not be originating from Ground Zero. We're originating from ground dome, as usual, as almost usual. But you know what's coming. We're already in it. And you can take any position you want on it. I do think that if you look at some of the old footage, and God knows you'll get the chance, you'll see what we saw back then, which is kind of unusual these days, at least on television. It was so-called news people actually in the process of figuring out what the event was as we watched them. So different from the normal course of television news where the whole thing has been digested, pre-digested, chewed, pre-chewed. It's the four stomachs approach. It's basically cow journalism. It's been digested in four stomachs before it gets to us. We were seeing the raw stuff a year ago. So sort of what's, I think, happening this week is an attempt to pre-digest the events of a year ago. Because if we can rerun them ad nauseum, we can be bigger than them, those events. We can own them. Just a guess. Just a guess. Hello, welcome to the show.
Thinks it's best to criticize his own kind, an animal of greed, best to sow that social seed. I thought by my thoughts all would come clear to me. Yeah, I can shoot a gun, maybe I should join the army. Is there a quiet place to lie? Watch this all go by. Wonder how can we survive wasting energy? Where's the enemy? A soldier on a walk the curvy line so straight, but I would fall behind. Maybe I am not so blinded. You talk of so much pity that is self-related, blaming not yourself. Said the fault lies somewhere else. Repeat it when the feeling's high. I wish it all could just rely on the depth of you and I, wasting energy. Where's the enemy? We'll be right back.
this song goodbye. I wonder how can we survive wasting energy? Where's the enemy? Repeat it when the feeling's high. I wish it all could just rely depth of you and I, wasting energy. Where's the enemy?
Wherever you are, it's 3 a.m. and I'm away. Imagine the light upon your blue transparent.
It's just past 3 a.m., 3 in the morning in Melbourne, Australia. I don't know why I happen to remember that. Hell, from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to yet another edition of the show. And apropos of all the communities campaigning for the title of Home of the Homeless, it may be up for grabs. You know, that was just my little jest, but the title, ladies and gentlemen, of the vast audio radiance, may be up for grabs. Quote, saying they're tired of waiting for the city of Santa Monica to act, Chamber of Commerce officials this week formed a public safety committee that hopes to launch a zero-tolerance crackdown against the homeless. Good Lord, what the hell is going on? Among the suggested actions the committee could explore are hiring a security firm. Always a good idea. Hey, let's do that right now. Inviting officials from municipalities that take a tough stance against the homeless to share their practices, and asking hotels to hand out flyers urging tourists not to give food or money to panhandlers. This is less than 3 weeks before the City Council of Santa Monica is expected to vote on measures that could curb feeding programs in the parks and ban sleeping in storefront doorways. The new committee is a bold departure for the chamber. We need to go beyond just putting pressure on the city, said the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce. We have to drive this issue forward. We have to organize ourselves with a campaign of zero tolerance, said the new general manager of the big shopping mall in downtown Santa Monica. We should have pamphlets at the hotels that say, do not give the homeless money, he's added. I'm not trying to be mean, says the president-elect of the Chamber of Commerce. We need people that have fire. Police Chief James Butts, yes, Chief Butts, said it would be difficult to stop panhandlers from hanging out outside of a store day after day. One option in this situation, he suggested, would be for the city to lease the space, the street space, to a private entity, and that entity could basically set whatever rules it wants. Yeah, privatize the streets. Why didn't I think of that? Oh, I know. I know why. Unless a panhandler engages in aggressive panhandling, there's not much law enforcement could do, according to the chief. The same holds true for the homeless who stay put in one spot for hours. As long as they don't have camping gear and equipment, they're not violating anti-camping laws. It's got to be more than stretched out in a doorway, he said. That's the chief. Said one business owner, within the homeless subculture, Santa Monica's on the map with a red carpet and a warm meal. The new committee will not replace the Chamber of Commerce's homeless task force, which is designed to help the homeless. I know it's all confusing and contradictory, but that's the world we live in, ladies. It's the new world. Everything has changed. We pointed that out. Hey, by the way, some follow-ups. Apropos, first of all, of Heathrow Airport. I neglected to mention that one of the things that makes the struggle to go from one terminal to another there so absolutely horrifying is that when you get out of the cattle pen area and get back into the terminal space, you're then faced with trying to find your way to where you want to go to get on a plane, it being an airport and all. But they've taken the airport as shopping mall premise to unbelievable, undreamed of heights, ladies and gentlemen. The amount of signage screaming duty free, shop here, and the number of shops that block your way that you have to pass through, literally pass through, not around, to get to just the area where the gates start is stupefying. I mean, the visual noise, unbelievable. I have some communiques from listeners on the subject of Heathrow. I was inspired to write to share your feelings of frustration and comprehension arising from the Heathrow inter-terminal shuffle. I myself, plus two kids, plus absinthe and crystal-laden hand baggage, plus two violins, plus two bags full of Game Boys, had to make my way from a Prague-London flight Terminal 1 to a London-LA flight Terminal 3. I know the ins and outs of Heathrow. Still 2 hours with a 10-minute delay here, a 20-minute delay there, and another 10-20 minutes lining up at that ridiculous security machine, 15 minutes standing around listening to the polite conversation between the American Airlines ticket issuer and two Alitalia ground crew about one of their passengers, and we had to fairly hoof it to make it onto the plane. Never did L.A. seem more attractive, even if it doesn't have cobbled streets, says this correspondent. I want to point out on the subject of advertising and mauling, Los Angeles International Airport remains, to my knowledge, the only major airport in the civilized world that is not whose interior is not festooned with advertising. There's some stores. But at Heathrow, there's stores, billboards, little airport sign. So at LAX, the only signs, aside from the ones right over the stores, are the signs telling you where your gates are, where you should go. From Mark in Switzerland, it is an unfortunate yet well-known fact that everyone making a flight connection that requires a terminal change at London Heathrow must do so by moving through a single room known as the Flight Connection Center. All passengers, regardless of airline, must converge on a single point of transfer. This can be a particularly painful experience for those passengers departing from Terminal 4 because it's located almost a mile away from the other terminals at Heathrow. Yes, it is. All passengers, including those transferring from UK domestic flights and flights from the Irish Republic, are also herded via the Flight Connection Center. This explains the need for the apparent redundancy of passport checks and renewed security. You would think the British Airports Authority would have the intelligence to handle these minority of passengers separately and not require everyone to converge at a single focal point. Yes, you would. And another note on airport security in Europe. You know how in the United States you have to take your computer out of its laptop computer out of its bag and put it separately on the X-ray conveyor? You do not have to do that in Europe. Why? I'm just asking. Why? Computers are safer. The bad guys don't know about computers. And you, just saying, nowhere in Europe that I was at. I haven't been all over Europe, but I'm just saying. One of the great ironies I discovered on my recent trip to Europe, I was flying back on an airline, big airline, begins with a V. And they're bragging about their new seats. And they have a little booklet that tells you all about the perks that are available in their new seats while you're sitting in one of their new seats. And one of the perks is, speaking of laptop computers, they have power for your laptop so you don't run your battery down on the long flight. And in the very beginning of the booklet, there's a picture of a man relaxing in that one of those swell new seats, working at a laptop computer, clearly an Apple PowerBook, because you can see a big Apple logo on the front of the computer. So I asked the flight attendant for one of the special cables to connect my PowerBook to their power, and about 10 minutes later, the director of passenger services came around and said, "I'm so very sorry, but we have cables for every computer except for Apple Macs." I pointed out the photograph in the beginning of the pamphlet to him, and he was amused. The digital wonderland beckons, ladies and gentlemen. Australia has delayed imposing its quotas for the amount of high-definition television that broadcasters must provide. They start 2 years after digital transmissions start in an area. 2 years after you start getting digital TV, broadcasters have to start broadcasting in new, swell, high definition. However, note this, please. Commercials count towards the required hours of high definition programming. Oh, that'll never happen here. They won't count commercials against the quota of... So buy that digital TV and enjoy your commercials. And speaking of television... While some news organizations have tried to sneak material through airport screeners, ABC News thought bigger. The network smuggled depleted uranium into New York. ABC conducted its operation to test how authorities are guarding against the possibility of dirty bomb attack. Federal authorities are angry they had to spend time on ABC's experiment. The story comes amidst controversy over stories in the New York Daily News and CBS this week about how journalists tried to test airport security by trying to pass items that should have set off alarms. Oh, didn't somebody I know travel through an airport this week with a sewing kit? Yes. Other news of television. Fremantle Media, the production company that produced the now-canceled 100 Center Street and Nero Wolf series on A&E, is talking with that channel and other cable services about launching new inexpensive programming in a genre company executives label industrial drama. They would be 5-day or night-per-week dramas produced in high-definition video for one-third to one-half less than traditional dramas. Such shows have worked well overseas, including Prisoner Cell Block H in Australia. That's the first one that they propose to bring up to us is Women Behind Bars, the first industrial project in play for a cable network. Women Behind Bars. Up for consideration at MTV is Real Life Adventures, a weekly reality program featuring people hurtled into a week of surprise adventure and romance. On the Discovery Channel's burner is Life Laundry. I don't know what that is, but I love the title. And when ABC's Good Morning America cut to weatherman Tony Perkins this past week for one of his Talk to the Real People bits, standing behind him were members of a high school hockey team from Push, Nevada. "I love Push, Nevada," Perkins told his audience on camera. Loud cheers from the teammates, "because the guys from the Push Nevada High School hockey team have given me this jersey. Last year they went 12-1, he continued. "They're about to start their new season this year, lost the championship game last year, but they said they're going to win this year," and the team behind him cheers. Then Perkins moved on to the weather. "Only one problem, there's no such place as Push Nevada. There's no high school, there's no community. Push Nevada is the name of an ABC drama series premiering this fall. The hockey players who appeared with ABC News' weatherman Perkins on the ABC News-produced Good Morning America were actors hired by a marketing company that ABC Entertainment had hired to promote the new drama series Push Nevada. ABC says neither the entertainment division nor the news division had any knowledge that Los Angeles-based ADD Marketing, as in Attention Deficit Disorder, planned to pull this stunt on the news show. And apparently no one involved with Good Morning America was aware that ABC Entertainment has a primetime show debuting this fall called Push Nevada. They don't go to the meetings? ADD specializes in viral marketing. "It's all about being cool, indie, and staying under the radar," says the company's CEO, Scott Leonard. ABC Entertainment says, "We've decided to market Push Nevada in a different fashion. To that end, we've hired a company that specialized in grassroots campaigns, and one aspect of the campaign they formulated was this hockey team in New York. However, the people implementing the campaign did not take into account the types of questions that could arise when you enact this with a different division of the same company." The news division, ladies and gentlemen. Know that they had a show called Push Nevada on the network, you see, on the same network. It's the news division. They're too busy smuggling depleted uranium into New York. On a similar note, when Faye Weldon accepted £50,000 to write a novel extolling the virtues of the jewelry company Bulgari, talked about on this broadcast last year, her decision was dismissed as a minor act of folly by a playful iconoclast. But less than a year later, the literary establishment is in for a shock. Sponsored novels are about to come into their own with the launch of a new company that aims to provide respected authors to write specially commissioned novels for governments as well as big business. Narration Limited will produce fictional stories on demand for companies and public bodies seeking to explain difficult ideas to the public. The Foreign Policy Center of Great Britain, an independent think tank, has spent $20,000 on an online novella called Need to Know about an anti-globalization campaigner who abandons direct action in favor of protesting via the Internet. All right, then. I'll get me some of that money. A year later, the Supreme Court of Afghanistan has backed a decision to ban women from singing on the radio. And finally, at the top of the week's news, ladies and gentlemen, have you heard about this? The war game? The United States carried on to simulate a war with Iraq. It's from The Guardian in England. The U.S. Armed Forces staged a rehearsal using more than 13,000 troops, countless computers, and $250 million. Officially, America won. What really happened is quite another story, one that has set alarm bells ringing throughout America's defense establishment and raised questions over the military's readiness for an invasion of Iraq. In fact, this war game was won by Saddam Hussein, or at least by the retired Marine playing the part of Saddam Hussein, Lieutenant General Paul Van Riper. In the first few days of the exercise, using surprise and unorthodox tactics, the wily 64-year-old Vietnam veteran theoretically sank most of the U.S. fleet in the Persian Gulf, bringing the U.S. assault to a halt. What happened next? The Pentagon top brass pretended the whole thing had not happened. They ordered their dead troops back to life and refloated the sunken fleet. Then they instructed the enemy forces to look the other way as the Marines performed amphibious landings. Eventually, Van Riper got so fed up with all this cheating, he refused to play anymore. Instead, he sat on the sidelines making abrasive remarks until the three-week war game, Millennium Challenge, staggered to a conclusion on August 15th with a U.S. victory. Van Riper blew the whistle. His driving concern is that if and when the real fighting starts, American troops will be sent into battle with a set of half-baked tactics. Nothing was learned from this exercise, he said. A culture not willing to think hard and test itself does not augur well for the future. The exercise, he says, was rigged from the outset. Millennium Challenge was the biggest war game of all time. It had been planned for 2 years and involved integrated operations by the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. The exercises were part real, troops spread across the U.S. supported by actual planes and warships, and part virtual. So, ladies and gentlemen, I wouldn't worry if I were you about a big new war, because we've already won. And we won the easy way.
After you hurt me, after I hurt you, and all of our bad dreams one by one came true. You said it was goodbye, but the eyes never lie, and I knew that it was only jive. So you found a new lover to wear your crown, and I found a cheap flat up in Chinatown. I saw you with stone stars and chic bars downtown Mars, but I knew that it was only jive. Cut me loose, I hit the juice, somebody deep inside me died. Punch that tune, who hit the moon, who made the dime store gypsy lie? I hit the juice, somebody deep inside me died. Who punched that tune? Who hit the moon? Who made the dime store gypsy lie? You ain't got no love, Jones, not for me, not much. How come the sparks fly every time we touch? The meaning becomes clear every time you are near. But maybe it's only jive. Maybe it's only jive.
This is Le Show, This Is No Game, and now, Tales of Airport Security. Our copyrighted feature continues. Here's one listener's account of recent inadvertent but successful penetrations through American airport security. Sunday, August 16th, San Diego Airport. My wife inadvertently sends not only nail clippers and tweezers through an X-ray scanner, but a pair of 5-inch scissors. Nothing is detected. Tuesday, September 4th, San Francisco Airport. I inadvertently leave my Swiss Army knife, a Swiss Champ, the largest standard model made, in my briefcase. It passes through an X-ray scanner, undetected. Wednesday, September 5th, United Nations Headquarters, New York. The same briefcase containing the same knife passes through the X-ray scanner at the UN. Knife remained undetected. That's not an airport. From Lance in Massachusetts, a couple of tales of airport security. Last weekend, I flew out of Boston's Logan Airport. I forgot to remove my watch before passing through the metal detector, so I was singled out for wanding. Unless there's some new kind of handheld metal detector available, the wand that the security agent used wasn't working properly. It went off constantly whenever it was in motion. The agent frequently would pause in his inspection of me and run it over his metal watch. I believe it made a slightly louder noise when it passed over his watch, and he was taking this action to remind himself what noise it would make with actual metal. He would then continue with his inspection of me with the wand constantly making noise. I don't know how one could ever detect anything with that wand. After it made the same noise on the bottom of my feet with both my shoes on and off, the agent gave up and quit inspecting me. But Lance continues, my favorite tale of airline security actually dates back to last November. I was taking an international flight out of Boston's Logan Airport. While they had me remove my laptop computer from my carry-on for individual inspection, they did not tell me to remove my MP3 player. It came up on the X-ray, and my bag was singled out for hand inspection. The guard, who at the time was employed by Argon Bright, eventually found the MP3 player and pulled it out. He appeared befuddled and looked it over from various angles for at least 30 seconds without asking me about it. Finally, a tall National Guardsman came over from his post to find out what was delaying the inspection and observed the player. Appearing to be under 25 years old, he knew immediately what it was. "Say, how much did you get that player for?" he asked me. "Did you like it?" He then turned to the Argon Bright inspector and told him, "Don't worry about it. It's an MP3 player. Let him go." Needless to say, I was comforted whenever I saw a National Guard soldier in the airport from that point onward, since I figured that would guarantee that a technologically ignorant security employee would not question my electronic devices for long. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. But they're not asking the questions anymore, and that's what counts. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, you've probably heard the drumbeats. This weekend, all of the top guns from the Bush administration, except for Donald Rumsfeld, made appearances on the Sunday Yak shows to put forward the case that Iraq is a clear and present danger. President Bush will speak at Ellis Island on September 11th. The New York Times reports that they selected Ellis Island rather than Governor's Island because it looks better. Get some nice shots of the Statue of Liberty lit up behind the president. The New York Times also reports that the Bush administration, which gave the appearance of discord as top advisors to President George Herbert Walker Bush, the dad, have weighed in the past few weeks against unilateral attacks on Iraq. The Times says the White House poo-poos the idea that They're now coming forward with the case for attacking Iraq as a response. This was apparently the plan all along. They didn't want to make the case in August. August, says a White House communications advisor, is not when you introduce a new product. President Bush has spent a total of 250 days of his presidency at Camp David, Kennebunkport, and his Texas ranch, 42% of his term so far at one of his three leisure destinations. He's devoted far more time to golf than to solo news conferences. That's a CBS News correspondent keeps those figures, keeps track of those figures. And 4 years ago, former President Bush, the dad, wrote there was unanimity within his administration that the 1991 Persian Gulf War should end once Hussein's forces have been driven from Kuwait. If he'd sent U.S. military forces onto Baghdad, Bush wrote in the 1998 book he wrote with Brent Scowcroft, his national security advisor, quote, "The United States could conceivably still be an occupying power in a bitterly hostile land, trying to eliminate Saddam, extending the ground war into an occupation of Iraq would have violated our guideline about not changing objectives in midstream and would have incurred incalculable human and political costs," Bush, senior, not really a senior, wrote in the book entitled A World Transformed. The current President Bush spent part of the weekend talking on the telephone to the presidents of France, Russia, and China, trying to convince them of the wisdom of the U.S. plan to attack or to somehow confront Iraq. None of the three countries made any sign of agreement. Tony Blair visited the president at Camp David over the weekend and issued a ringing endorsement of the need to confront Iraq. And on Monday, President Bush meets with the Prime Minister of the Prime Minister of Canada, Jean Chrétien, to try to persuade him of the wisdom of the course of action. But meanwhile, as the president completes his weekend at Camp David, there may be time for a phone call.
Hello.
Hey, 41. This is...
It is, 43. Been waiting.
For what?
For your call, for autumn, for you to come to your senses about Saddam.
Well, that is why I called, but...
Well, good, because getting a little tired of hearing about disarray in your administration. Conflict, discord.
Yeah.
It's not why we stocked your shop with the wisest people this side of Brookings.
Yeah.
Discord, disarray, conflict.
Yeah.
That's the way the Democrats do things, not us.
Don't tell me, 41. Tell Colin. He's the one who's...
Colin's a good man.
Hey, he may give more money to the Red Cross than Jerry Lewis himself, but he's the guy who's been springing all these leaks. He's the guy who's been calling his pals
Brent Scowcroft
and Jim Baker to wage a war of words with me about our determination to rid the world of Saddam Hussein. And I'm getting just a little bit tired of it.
Hey, Sprout, look on the bright side. You got no baseball strikes. Yeah. The Dems aren't even in the argument over Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Your poll numbers are holding remarkably steady.
Oh, hey, look, I don't even read that stuff.
Well, you have it read to you.
Well, sure.
Look,
but...
43, what Colin's doing is a good thing. He's not undermining you. He's putting on a show for our allies. See, you want a debate? Here's a debate now. And... As for Baker, can't help the fact that he honestly believes that you're not up to the job, but that's just one wise man's opinion, not worth worrying about.
Okay, well, I'm up here at Camp David, and the Blair Bear and
well,
I are...
Sorry, 43. Yeah. Who's up there with you?
The Blair Bear. Tony is my daughter's call him. Not that I want to drag my family into this.
No,
but,
well, you can tell Tony Blair from me that thanks to him... The special relationship between the United States and Great Britain has never been more special.
You did used to write your own speeches, didn't you? All right, I'll tell him. But look here. The Blair Bear and I are trying to coordinate our carefully calibrated rollout of the rationale lay for our policy of Iraqi regime change.
And just ask him for me if he'd like to be sitting in a cafe in Tel Aviv the day we go into Baghdad.
Okay, fine. Anyway, he's a huge nut on the old Iran-Contra deal.
Yeah.
He spent me a boatload of euros that the guy who introduced Alan North to all the persons of interest was named Albert Hakim. And, you know, obviously I only know what you knew, but I say it was Abu Nidal, you know, the terrorist that just died in Baghdad.
Under mysterious and suspicious circumstances. With the Iraqis calling it a suicide. Yeah, I vaguely remember him. Have this feeling that your friend Mr. Blair is right, but I'd have to go look at my notes.
And nobody could get access to those, even you.
Yeah.
So, okay, look. You got to tell your people, you know, your Schwarzkopf, Evil Eagle Burger. Man, that guy should get out on the treadmill and not get off for a couple months. But, you know, tell all your guys that, boys, George W. is the president now. When he wants your advice, he'll ask for it and ignore it in private.
Look, 43, no, you think not going all the way to Baghdad was one of the two big mistakes of my administration.
doesn't matter what I think. Matters what the people who are paid to do the thinking around here think, you know?
Well, they think I'm a wimp.
Nobody thinks you're a wimp anymore, 41. I mean, I asked Wolfowitz himself that very question a couple weeks ago during a policy get-together. Man, he just couldn't say enough about you as a man of courage.
Really?
Yeah. He said it was a special kind of courage.
All right, but, all right. Anyway, look, Saddam's no George Washington.
He's not even a George Washington Carter.
No. Well, who is? But an Iraq without the iron hand of Saddam is like Yugoslavia gone totally bonkers, you know? That strengthens Iran. And a strong Iran destabilizes Saudi Arabia to the point where...
C-41, this was always your problem. Not the read my lips and not the stopping the war within two beers pissing distance of Baghdad. This is hard for me to say, but you lack moral clarity. You know, it's all this on the one hand this, but on the other side of the fence there's the other hand where you least expect it kind of stuff. And you know what it does? It paralyzes will. I tell you one little piece of wisdom I picked up since I've been on this job. Will is the only thing in the whole world that's stronger than won't.
Okay, just want you to know that the apple cart you're upsetting here has been very carefully put together and maintained by some very good friends of the Bush family for the last 30 or 40 years.
Oh,
it's
look.
Been kind of okay for the economy of certain parts of West Texas, too. So,
look, everybody appreciates the way the pump of leadership was primed in this particular case, but we're in a new century. We're weaning ourselves off of dependence on Middle Eastern oil the right way, shifting not to some uncertain renewable pie in the sky, but to...
No, know where you're going with this, to Russian oil. You know, that's great if it works. But,
41, where else is Putin going to sell his oil?
Well, please tell your dad I say hello.
Who's that, Blair?
Yeah, that is the bear himself.
Yeah. Ask him for me how much he's modeling himself on Bill Clinton these days. What a crock.
Okay, will do. Later, I'll do that. Look, I got some heavy lifting ahead of me this week.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Speech at Ellis Island,
yeah.
Speech at the UN.
Well, that's the easy stuff. That's just reading prompter. But, you know, I got to go one-on-one with Sean Cradian. I mean, that's what Colin's got me doing, bending over and spreading them for the Prime Minister of friggin' Canada. Please support our Iraq policy, Mr. Prime Minister, and we won't let Major League Baseball close down the Expos.
Yeah,
you know, the UN, at least I'm talking to some real countries, but...
Just think that at some point, some former member of my administration is going to stand up and say, why would sad him use weapons of mass destruction when he knows that doing so would mean the immediate nuking of his vicinity.
Well, and this is all I'm asking you to do, is put the muzzle on your dogs.
They're independent men of very high character.
Yeah. They'll cork it if you ask them to.
Didn't ask them to uncork it.
Didn't say that you did. You're just doing a job here, just finishing a job.
Okay, see an Eagle Burger this week at the Yale Club.
Just tell him to lay off the second cream brulee, will you?
We'll pass on all appropriate messages, 43.
Okay, 41. Wish me luck at Ellis Island. The guys say the shot looks great.
Well, your mom and I will pray for no rain.
Thanks. Yeah. Although they could computer graphic me into a shot of the area, you know, in a storm, and that looked amazing, like a rain out of Shea, you know.
Yeah. You take care, 43.
That's my job, 41.
Never seen a quaint old southern city. Just think of New Orleans. If you've never seen that town, boy, it's a pity. There's nothing like New Orleans. It will remind you of old-fashioned lace. A glass of wine will greet your smiling face. And if you ever see a black-eyed gal like mine, boy, oh, then you're right in it, right in New Orleans.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, to complete the program on an apologetic note, our apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Some public officials and relatives thereof. The mayor of Newark, Ohio, is apologizing for his actions after being arrested for driving under the influence. Mayor Frank Stair was pulled over by Ohio State Highway Patrol troopers. He was given a field sobriety test, which he failed. He was taken to the nearby police department, where he refused to submit to a breathalyzer. Mayor Stair says he regrets what happened and will take responsibility for it. He was intoxicated after attending a car show run by Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, where he had five beers. You heard me, correct? You heard me. In audio taped remarks played on Israeli TV this week, the wife of former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, quote, "This country can burn," and that she and her husband would leave Israel because he's not appreciated. Sarah Netanyahu later apologized in a letter to Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. In the phone call, she said, quote, "There are sometimes issues of revenge and personal conflicts, and they don't understand one thing. When the country is in flames, when there are terror attacks, there's one person who can save this country," referring to her husband, who is vying with Ariel Sharon for leadership of the party. Using Netanyahu's nickname, she said, "Bibi is a leader who's greater than this entire country. He really is a leader on a national scale. We'll move abroad. This country can burn. This country can't survive without Bibi. People here will be slaughtered." Unquote, Sarah Netanyahu. She now says, "I'm sorry for the things I said. I love our country. This is my home, and like everyone else, I have no other home." The Philadelphia Daily News has printed an apology amid accusations of racial insensitivity for running page one mugshots of more than a dozen fugitive murder suspects, all minorities. Quote, "The front page photos from last Thursday sent the message to some readers that only black men commit murder. That was a mistake," managing editor Ellen Foley wrote. A coalition of black community leaders and civic groups formed in response to the Daily News front page. They want Foley and the editor of the paper to resign. Coalition also said it would consider calling for a boycott of the paper. Foley said in the apology that the newspaper published the article to help police catch the fugitives. She said two had been arrested since the article ran. The editors decided to apologize not because of any factual inaccuracy on the front page, but because of the impression it made. "I think the cover was literally correct," said the editor, Stahlberg, editor Zach Stahlberg, "but a mistake on our part because what we have to worry about is perceptions and not just the literal truth." Uh-oh. And German engineering giant Siemens has hastily abandoned plans to register the trademark Zyklon for a range of home products, including gas ovens. Zyklon was the name of the poison gas used in Nazi extermination camps. "We are very sorry if this trademark application has caused any offense," says spokeswoman Eva Delabre. Those, ladies and gentlemen, are the apologies of the week. A range of products.
Funny how you can say that thing and I start feeling really bad. Funny how I can do that thing and you turn certifiably mad. Well, men and women, boys and girls, we're like two types of monkeys from two separate worlds. It's alpha, it's beta, and sex is the sweetener. And sometimes I'd rather be walking the dog. I'd rather be walking the dog. Don't think we ever will. I'd rather be walking the dog. Come on for a walk, doggy. Sexy, you think I'm just acting strange. Funny how when you're being boyish, I'm embarrassed because you look half deranged. Well, a woman and men, jokers and fools, we're playing a game using different rules. It's alpha, it's beta, and sex is the teaser. And sometimes I'd rather be walking the dog. I'd rather be walking. Each other. and I don't think we ever will. I'd rather be walking the walking the dog. Yeah. Listen to me, darling. So don't be afraid, go on back to your cave. And if you don't want to mourn me, darling, don't call me. I'd rather be walking the dog. I'd rather be walking the dog. 'Cause we don't understand each other, and I don't think we ever will. I'd rather be walking. Don't you know that we're all just one in heaven? We are just one in heaven, and we'd rather be walking the dark.
Don't be too hard on Siemens, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, because last month the English sporting goods manufacturer Umbro apologized after complaints that it named one of its sports shoes Zyklon. It means cyclone in German. What's your problem? Oh, the problem is it's the name of poison. Okay, I get it now. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system to Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, on shortwave up and down the east coast of North America on WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. And on your computer around the world whenever you want it at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And you know what? It would be just like being able to remember 9/11 if you'd agree to join me then. Would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.